رحم الله من قرأ الفاتحة. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين، خاتم النبيين، شفيع المذنبين، رحمة للعالمين، مولانا وسيدنا أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المنتجبين المذلومين الهداة المهديين، لا سيما بقية الله في الأرض، أرواحنا له الفدا، ولعنة الله على أعدائهم أجمعين، من الآن إلى قيام يوم الدين. أما بعد، فقد قال الإمام جعفر الصادق جعل الخير كله في بيت، وجعل مفتاحه في الزهد في الدنيا، صلوات الله محمد وآل محمد. Respected elders, brothers, sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As I mentioned yesterday, we are going to discuss tonight a little bit more about those kinds of social problems which is worrying many members of the community. And many members of the community have actually approached me and told me that yesterday's discussion was very relevant, and that it was good that someone spoke about this because many people are in denial that this thing is even going on. So in that sense, I just want to remind you once again that what we discuss is for each and every person to look at his own life, look at his family, look at his children, and then you can decide. You're the best person to judge, is this really happening or not? But the foolish thing would be just to close our eyes and say, well, inshallah, it's not happening in my family. Unless we know about it, we can't deal with it. And unless we look closely, we won't find it. So we need to look at our lives and our families and our households. A few things which I wanted to touch upon before we go into the discussion is that many of the brothers are asking regarding resources or links or references about some of the things we have discussed. So I'm going to provide a few right now. If you want, make a note on your phone or however you want to memorize it, but inshallah these things will be useful for you. In my opinion, when community members ask me a question, I give two responses. If the question is very urgent, if they need to know something right now, right here, then I give them the answer. But generally speaking, people are not in that position. They have time. So what I usually do is I give them the way to find the answer. Today I'm here, tomorrow I won't be here. And really these answers are not difficult to find at all. So I will tell them, for example, go onto Google, put these search items and look at the links. Or I'll send them a screenshot and I'll say, look, here is the information, go and find it. Why? Okay, it's much easier for me just to give the answer sometimes. But no, I believe it's better to teach a person how to fish rather than just giving them a fish. So in this way, I really want to encourage you that when you have these religious questions, trust me, it's not that difficult. Yes, the more complex questions, the more deeper questions, there you need someone's guidance. Otherwise, generally speaking, laws and these kinds of things are easily obtainable through simple Google searches. So number one, regarding our discussion on death, barzakh and the hereafter, what are the resources for this? There are many, not many in English, but the ones in English which I've come across, I will share with you. Number one, there's a book by Ayatullah Dast Ghaib Shirazi called Barzakh. It's available here in Mumbai. Our local community booksellers are selling them, and it's available. Number two is a book that is published by the World Federation, written by Sheikh Bahmanpour of London, very good scholar of our community in London. And that is called The Eternal Life. That is also a good one. It might be available in hard copy. If not, then soft copy is definitely available. You can purchase a copy if you wish. Another one that I really want to emphasize, and I always say this in my lectures, that if you are a Shia Ithnashiri, you need to have fundamentally, as a starting point, four books that you continuously refer to. Five books that you continuously refer to. Five. Number one, of course, the Holy Quran. Number two, Nahjul Balagha. You must have this. You must refer to it. You must look at it. You are the Shias of Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salatu wassalam. So you need to know what your Mawla was saying, doing, acting, thinking. You need to know this. Number three, Sahifa Sajjadiya. When you want to create a very special link between you and your Lord through supplications, Sahifa Sajjadiya. Number four, Mafatihul Jinan. Again, to create that link, your regular and irregular recitations will come from this book, Mafatihul Jinan. And number five, Tawzihul Masail of your Marja. Manual of Islamic Laws of your Marja'e Taqleed. It is available in hard copy, but easier than that, go onto your App Store or your whatever it's called in Android, search iSistani, I-S-I-S-T-A-N-I, iSistani. You'll see an app, green, the color is green. Download it free of charge. The whole of the Tawzihul Masail is available on your smartphone at your fingertips. These are not new things. Many of you already know this, inshallah. But trust me, there is a wealth of information out there. What else? Alislam.org. Al-Islam. ISLAM.org. For an English-speaking Shia, this, I will assure you, will take care of 99% of your knowledge requirements. It's amazing. All manner of different articles, books and lectures are on that site. alislam.org. And finally, two email addresses. Many people say, we want to ask questions, we don't know where to ask, how to ask. Two email addresses of two of our community offices in the world, situated in the heart of the main Shia centers of learning, both by the World Federation. One is in Qom, one is in Najaf. The email addresses are very simple. The first one is Qom, Q-U-M, at world-federation.org. Hyphen is dash, not underscore, but dash. Q-U-M at worldfederation.org. The other one is Najaf at world-federation.org. If you want your questions answered, you want to write in English, you want to receive it in English in a reasonable amount of time, these are some of the ways that we have come up with as a community. Alhamdulillah, may Allah give us tawfiq and give our institutions more strength and more resources to be able to continue to do this kind of work. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Yesterday's discussion was mainly focused on two of the social issues in the community. One was the issue of intoxicants, and one was the issue of illicit relationships between especially the younger members of the community. Tonight, we're going to look at two more issues. One is gambling, and one is parenting. The parenting discussion is mainly focused towards parenting teens, because that is the group that we are talking about. But it has also some relevance for younger children as well. gambling and betting. These are the two things which we are going to discuss. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala doesn't exactly use the term gambling. He doesn't exactly use the term betting. He uses a more general term which includes these two things. The term he uses in the Quran is games of chance. And usually you'll see that this game of chance is mentioned alongside alcohol, and we already discussed intoxicants yesterday. In other words, these things are, generally speaking, they are linked. We'll discuss why. So what are games of chance and what is the ruling and what do we understand by this? Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Games of chance, let me first go through. If you do a search on the results and the bad consequences of gambling, you'll find many things. Number one, for example, it causes a person mental agitation. It provides them with unbelievable highs. So when you win or when you bet on something and you're proven true, it's an amazing feeling of euphoria. But then inevitably you have to experience a downside as well, because you will lose more than you win. So in order to achieve that high sense of feeling again, you'll do it more and more and more. Hence the addiction. It can lead to physical maladies and mental maladies. It can affect the heart, the blood sugar, all manner of physical things. It is highly addictive. People who gamble, usually they say, we cannot sleep, we cannot switch off, we cannot bring ourselves onto normal activities. We are always consumed by this thought of gambling and betting. Number four, on a spiritual level, it causes distraction of the soul. How is a person going to have his soul directed towards God if he is afflicted by this illness of gambling and betting? Number five, now that someone is always agitated, can't sleep, can't switch off, well, what will they do? They will turn to substance abuse, drugs, alcohol. So you see, it's all interrelated. One affects the other, one encourages the other. Now I'm addicted to gambling, but I don't have the money to pay. So what do? Well, I will resort to crime to fuel my addiction. So again, there's another link. It leads to debt, it leads to marriage breakup, it leads to children being mistreated, it leads to all manner of ills in society. We have a hadith from Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq alayhi salam. He says, Allah pardons all the sinners in the holy month of Ramadan except for three types of people. One, who drink wine. Two are those who gamble. And three are those who bear enmity towards a fellow Muslim. So it's a very serious thing. It's a very, one of the major, major sins is gambling. Now, what are games of chance? Unfortunately, sometimes we misuse the terminology of the Holy Quran. Because the Quran tries to be very broad, because it has to last for 1400 years or more, the Quran has to use very broad terms. So instead of saying things like playing cards or this particular type of wine, you know, some people say, why doesn't it say explicitly? Why doesn't it give us the answer explicitly? No, please, let's be more mature than this. It is a book that has to last till the end of time in multiple cultures and multiple languages. It has to use broad terms. So it's used the term games of chance. Within this game of chance, the scholars tell us all manner of gambling and making wagers. I wager you, I bet you. These are all included under the umbrella of game of chance. Quran says, إِنَّمَا يُرِيدُ الشَّيْطَانَ أَن يُوقَعَ بَيْنَكُمُ الْعَدَاوَةِ. It says Shaitan is working to create enmity between you. In what way? وَالْبَغْضَى, an ill feeling. فِي الْخَمْرِ وَالْمَيْسِرِ, in alcohol, meaning all intoxicants, and maysir, games of chance. وَيَسُدَّكُمْ عَنْ ذِكْرِ اللَّهِ. What will happen if you do this? You will move away from the remembrance of God. وَعَنِ السَّلَاةِ. And your namaz will be affected. Someone who is consumed by this will not be able to focus their mind upon prayer, upon God, upon godliness. Now, let's go into a little bit more detail. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Gambling and betting, we've discussed. Now, what if someone says, okay, I don't gamble, I don't bet, but I play cards. I play cards for fun. I play cards when there's no betting or gambling even involved. Okay? It's quite common that people are playing with cards but no gambling or betting is involved. Now what does Islam say? So I wanted to quote to you this hadith from Imam Ali al-Ridha alayhi salatu wasalam. He says in one of his sayings that at the time that the blessed head of Imam Hussein was carried into Sham, Yazid, curses be upon him, started to dine. He was eating and he was drinking barley wine with his friends and associates. After the meal, Yazid ordered the blessed head to be kept in a platter, in a dish, and placed at the feet of his throne. A chessboard was brought and spread out. Now, some people say, why chess? This is one of the reasons, because of the mention of chess in this very heinous way. One of the mentions. But there are other mentions of chess as well. A chessboard was spread and the accursed Yazid sat down to play. During the game, he ridiculed the head of Imam Hussein, the father of Imam Hussein, and the grandfather of Imam Hussein. Whenever Yazid won a game, he would take hold of the wine and drink three times. Then he would pour the remaining wine upon the holy head of Imam Hussein. This is not the only reason regarding chess and the instruments of gambling. Chess was a big gambling tool in those days. But you can get the idea of the kind of mehfil and area and gathering that these things were used in. They were not used in nice things. They were not used for nice objectives and outcomes. Eighth Imam continues, whoever is our Shia must abstain from barley wine and chess. One who sees wine or chess must remember Imam Hussein and invoke curse upon Yazid and the progeny of Yazid. If a Shia does this, then Allah the Almighty will forgive all his sins, even if they are more numerous than the stars. In other words, at every opportunity, the Imams are warning us, stay away. There's no mention here of chess being a tool of gambling. There's no mention here of even us playing chess. Imam is saying, even if you see it, even if you come across it, even if it's in front of you. So what happens is the ulama, they take all these hadith, they take all these references and they make a fatwa. A fatwa is not just picked out of the sky. A fatwa is based upon evidence and proof. So having taken all of these things, they have made a ruling. A Muslim is not allowed to play with the instruments of gambling, even if he's not gambling. So those things which are typically used for gambling, for example, you see cards, you know, and all of us know, and no one should be stupid and say, well, I didn't know. All of us know that these things are used in casinos and gambling and betting and playing for money and all sorts. Someone may say, well, I enjoy the game of poker, or I enjoy a different kind of game of cards. I'm not betting anything. I'm not even using matchsticks, which some people do. No, that's not the issue. One, the issue is gambling. But number two, the issue is using the tools of gambling. That is also not allowed. Look at the level of resistance that Islam wants us to build for these things. Islam says don't even go near it. Don't even play with it until the point, do you remember I don't know about these days, but in the past we used to have a game on PCs, Solitaire. Remember Solitaire? It's haram, even though it's an electronic version. This is the amount of distance Islam wants us to have from these things. Why? Because the danger is too great. The addiction level is too great. The outcomes are too horrifying for society. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Now, what about modern day? So these days now, we don't even need to sit at a table. We don't even need to deal any cards. We can gamble and bet on our phones. One of the biggest ones which is affecting this country, as per my understanding, is betting on things like IPL, Indian Premier League. You can bet on everything you can think of. You can bet on all sorts of things, even things that you can't even imagine, but they have a bet for it. The adverts are about betting. The apps are all promoted. They offer so many enticements and advantages that they say, you know, we'll give you this much free and this whatnot. What about that? Again, it comes under the banner of wager and betting, and this has been ruled as haram. So now, what are the rulings regarding this? Let me tell you with salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. So I asked a friend, I said, look, have I got my understanding correctly? And this is the conversation that we had. So I asked him, what about games of chance? Or what if someone says that, no, actually, when I bet on IPL, or when I bet on a football game or any other thing, it's not a game of chance. It's a game of skill. I'm so much into this sport, let's say cricket. I'm so much into cricket, I know exactly, I can judge what's going to happen. I can judge that this bowler is gonna, he bowls so well, he's gonna bowl a maiden. I know this batsman, he's prone to edging the ball, so I'll bet that he gets out on an edge. This batsman, he's grounded in his crease. He doesn't get his front pad forward, he's gonna be LBW. This is my skill, this is not a chance. I have seen these things, I'm an expert. So, I asked my colleague, I said, what is your understanding? Please confirm for me. He said, and he confirmed to me that basically, the only exceptions to this ruling are two, because we have them in hadith and they have been mentioned explicitly. One is archery. The other is horse racing. However, who can bet on those things? Only those people who are actually performing in those competitions. So only the archer himself, and only the jockey, the horse rider, we call him jockey. Only the jockey himself and the archer himself. Who does he bet with? Can he bet with Tom, Dick and Harry? Can he bet with a spectator? Can he bet with someone on the phone? No. He can only compete in this manner with others in the same competition. So archer with another archer, jockey with another jockey. Now we have some interesting questions which come. You know, community, mashallah, is very complicated. Minds of community are one step ahead, it seems. So we always have to like catch up. Community member says, okay, archery. Archery was for the time of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. But today, we don't have archery so much. What if today we say, shooting with a gun or a rifle or other things that are like archery, where you throw things to a target or you try and aim, for example darts or other things. Surely if archery was okay in the time of Rasulullah, these things are okay today. Or they say horse riding, who races horses anymore? Not many people. Maybe speed racing in a car, Formula One, motorsports, motorcycles, speedboats, yachting, maybe other forms are okay. Well, who says you need any kind of vehicle? Maybe just running is okay. Athletics, long distance, short distance, all types of racing, and on and on and on. So are these okay? Well, let me give you one thing. Have you heard of the term qiyas? Qiyas. Who has heard of this term? Give me your hand up. Qiyas. What is qiyas, brother?
Guess.
But in Islamic law, it has a specific definition. Qiyas is not allowed in Shia Isnashari fiqh. Qiyas is something which is sometimes used in Ahlus Sunnah fiqh. That's their problem. We don't need to worry about it. In our fiqh, it's not allowed. What is qiyas? Qiyas is, okay, this is A. A has a ruling. Let's say A is jaiz. Product A is jaiz. That's the ruling from our maraji. Then we come up with product B. And we say product B is similar to product A. Therefore, the ruling of product A will apply to product B. That is qiyas. This looks like this, so therefore the ruling must be the same as that one. Haram or halal? Is this jaiz or not in Shia fiqh? Strictly not allowed. Awwalu man qasa iblis. Remember this. The first one to do qiyas was iblis. This is hadith of Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq alayhi salam. Imam Sadiq has a conversation with Abu Hanifa. And the conversation he has, he says, "Oh Abu Hanifa, I hear you're practicing qiyas." He says, "Yes, in some things I do." So Imam starts to ask him a few questions. And I won't go into details. But at the end of the day, he realizes that actually qiyas is wrong and it doesn't work. Because the logic that we think is logic is not Allah's logic. Allah has a higher level of wisdom than us. Allah won't ever allow us to say, okay, this is similar to this, so just apply the same rule. Allah's way of doing things is much different. It's a higher level of knowledge and a higher level of wisdom. So Imam says to Abu Hanifa, he says, I warn you, do not practice qiyas. فَأَوَّلُ مَنْ قَاسَ إِبْلِيسِ. Because you are treading on the path of shaitan, the first one to do qiyas was Iblis. When he said to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, well, he's made out of clay and I'm made out of fire, so I should be the one that should be done prostration to. That is qiyas. You're totally misunderstanding the issue. You're just looking at it from one angle. Allah has looked at it from 1,000 angles and you're putting the ruling on this and that. We are not allowed to do that. Who can make this call? Who can say, yes, okay, we can take the ruling of one thing onto the other, only and only maraji. Qualified scholars, ayatullahs, mujtahids, whom we follow, Ayatullah Sistani, other ayatullahs, they are only the ones who are qualified to do this. We cannot. We cannot say archery is like shooting and horse racing is like running. No, we don't have that right. There are hundreds and hundreds of things in play. We don't understand sometimes the complexities of deriving a fatwa. We should not try. Coming back to the topic, Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Jabir narrates from the fifth Imam, who has quoted the Holy Prophet. He said, every competition is gambling where the loser has to pay a certain amount, even if that amount consists of merely a cashew nut. It doesn't matter, small amount, big amount, it doesn't really matter. Any amount, any penalty which is paid in a competitive environment is not jaiz. These are all betting and this is all haram. So have we dealt with gambling so far? We've said number one, the definition, number two, the instances, number three, the instruments used should not be used, no matter even if there's no money involved. Number four, we cannot do qiyas and start to make up our own rulings about new things in society. such as IPL and such as betting on the phone. Now we come on to how to deal with this thing. So first of all, the community has to be a bit brave. And it has to come to a realization that yes, there exists a problem. Do not bury your heads in the sand and just ignore and say, inshallah, it's not happening. The data is there and it is affecting people. Some people will choose not to believe it. That's their problem. Don't let it happen to you that in your family, God forbid, and I hope it doesn't affect anyone, if it is happening, you need to be aware of it. So the first step is always realization. Number two, it may be a case where that person has to be referred to professional help. Some things we have to refer to the experts in that field. They may need psychological help. They may need counseling help. These things are there. Human beings have come up with these things, of course, done in a confidential environment to protect the honor of a person. But there are times when people need help. It could be that they have to go for professional help. And from us, we need emotional and moral support. It's very easy for us just to turn a blind eye and just to make judgments on people. We really should not be doing this. We should be giving our emotional and moral support, inshallah. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. These were three of the social ills. And now I want to go on to some more related tips to this, which is involving parenting and child upbringing. There are lots of things to be said. I don't know how many things we'll get through, but we will try to get through as many as possible. Regarding teens, parenting teens, I want to make 4 points first of all, which are very general points. And if you can understand these 4 general points, then the specific points will make sense. First thing is that when you're a parent of a teen, you should think back to your own days. When you were at that age, what you went through, what you had experienced, think of your own days. This will help us as parents to understand the bodies, the mindsets, and the emotions of our children. Number two, you have to remember one thing, that teens have a habit. Once upon a time, they were all over you. They wanted your company, they wanted to talk to you, they wanted to confide in you. Then something happens, they hit an age, and all of a sudden they like to remain aloof. Now those conversations are not happening. Now the shopping trips with the mother, for example, are not happening. Now the different activities with the father are not happening. So your son once upon a time was a chatterbox. Maybe you even had to tell him that, please, enough, let's give it a rest for a while. And now he's hardly talking to you. How are you? Fine. How was your day? Good. Is everything okay? Yes. You want to talk about anything? No. One word answers. Once upon a time, there was no end, but now all of a sudden at teen, they remain aloof. Your daughter was willing to go with you places, to attend places, to join you in things. All of a sudden, she wants to stay home. Actually, what we have to bear in mind as parents is that this is very natural and it's very normal. Parents may be alarmed in the beginning and say, what's going on? But no, it's actually very important for children at this age, because now they're going towards adulthood. It's very important for them to make their own identity. And to make their own identity, they may need to seek some distance from you. They may need to feel, I need my space, I need time to think, I need time to process, I need time to reflect. This is very, very natural. Number three, third general point. Whilst it's difficult for you as a parent, it's also difficult for the child. You must remember this. Whilst you as a parent are seeing changes, well, they are seeing it firsthand. It's actually affecting them first and foremost. Like what? Number one, physical changes in the body. But number two, and this is where the tricky part is. On one hand, they feel they are changing into adults in their body. They're growing, voice is changing, all sorts of things are happening. But at the same time, maybe emotionally and mentally they are still children. And we play a role here. Because sometimes we treat them still as our small babies. And this is frustrating. It's frustrating for them, and we don't realize. Because they are becoming their own person. They are mentally and emotionally becoming adults. We want to keep them as children. So now think about something. Your child, your young child, you make them wear a jacket when it's cold, or you make them wear their clothes. You tie their shoes. You might feed them. You might comb their hair. You might wipe their nose. Now this child, when they grow older and they're a teen, do you still want to be wiping the nose and feeding them with your hand and tying their shoes? But mentally they may be still there, because we haven't given them the space to grow. Mentally they may still be very dependent upon parents, which is good in some senses, but it's not good in others. So they have this feeling and this mindset that no, we want to become our own person. The other thing that you'll notice about teens is whom do they look to for influence, and whom do they look to as their role model? Have you noticed that, for example, if there's a TV program, the TV program is aimed, let's just say for argument's sake, the TV program is aimed to a 13-year-old. What age children will be in that TV program which is aimed at a 13-year-old? What age? Usually you'll see the programs aimed towards a 13-year-old are about 15 and 16-year-olds. A program aimed at a 16-year-old is usually about 18, 19-year-olds. Because the media has understood, and it's psychologically proven as well, that teens will always look at the slightly older than them children, because they are going to that direction. They want to be like them. They find them cool. They find them amazing. They find them as good role models. The other point about teens and their difficulties is that a teen greatly cares what people think about them. How am I looking? How am I dressing? How's my body? Am I good at certain things? Am I known to be a talented person? Am I known to be a clever person, a wise person, a joking person, humorous person, good at sports, good at other things? They care a lot what other people think about them. Fourth general point, influences upon teens. Now, whether you like it or not as a parent, you will have to come to this realization that it could be your teen child is more influenced by their friends than by you. Your teen child, whether you like it or not, here, don't come and blame me that we don't agree with this. I'm telling you on your face, it's a fact. Whether you like it or not, your teen child may be more influenced by their friends than you. They want social bonds. They want friends. I have three boys. I can see how important it is. And I remember when I was young, how important it is for them to have friends and regular friends. So they build circles of friends and they have peers, and these peers are advising them and influencing them and praising them. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. So the teen, to summarize, is going through many changes. They're trying different things. They're coming up with their own identity and personality. That's why you'll see sometimes it'll be very frustrating for you as a parent. All of a sudden, your son or daughter has a crazy new hairstyle. Or they're wearing ajeeb clothes. You're like, what on earth are you wearing? How do you look? Or they're using new words and new jargon. And you're like, what? Is this Chinese or what? What are you saying? Why? Because they are forming their own identity. They're trying, they're exploring, they're experiencing. They're trying to carve out their own new identity. They're a new adult. They don't want to feel as if they're always under the parents' wing. Now we have, so there are the general points. Now please keep these general points in mind. We're going to go on to some specific advices. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. The first thing is, as a parent, and I think this is the most fundamental of all of them as a parent, be a role model. Be a role model. Your children, when they are born, they're very pure. They're very good. Okay? So you're at home. Someone comes to the door. You don't want to see that person. You tell your child, go and tell him, Papa's not home, Baba's not home. He'll say, excuse me, my father is there, he's saying he's not at home. So now, in your life with your child, they hear you say a lie. So what value have they learned? They've learned that, okay, sometimes it's okay to lie. Or they see that you've cheated someone. So what value have you given them? That it's okay to cheat someone. Or, for example, you're in the streets of Mumbai, the rain is falling, you're trying to drive your car or your motorbike or whatever, all of a sudden someone cuts you up, and all of a sudden all these four-letter words starting to come out. What has your child learned? It's okay to swear. It's namaz time at home, you come home, you're tired, you say, ah, afterwards. I'll pray in a couple of hours. 2-3 hours go by, 4 hours go by, 5 hours go by. 5 minutes before it's getting qaza, you quickly pray. What have you taught the child? Don't worry about namaz too much. You can delay. You sleep so late at night that namaz ishab is just something that is a dream. It never happens. Your routine is wrong. What has the child learned? Namaz ishab is something for the scholars and the wise men of this world, not for us. It's mosque time. You feel lazy. I had a hard day today. Forget it. What has your child learned? The wafat of the imams is not very important. My energy levels are more important. So these role model things that we do as parents are very important. Sometimes we think children are not aware or they're not watching. You don't know. They are absolutely aware and they know what's going on. And you'll be shocked sometimes when they call you out. When they say, yes, but you did this, but you said this, and then it comes back to you, and then you realize that actually, yes, I was doing those things, and it has had an impact upon my child. So the first thing is, role model for your children. Start some small habits, especially those with very young children. Can I have a show of hands? Who has children below the age of 11? Who has children above the age of 11, below the age of 20? So 11 to 19. So it's affecting quite a number of us. I'm in the same category. Start small habits. Okay, it's good if you start them even earlier, like 3, 4, 5. If you haven't, then start now. When you eat, what is your eating environment like? Do you eat together? Do you have phones at the table that every time, you know, you're on your WhatsApp and your text while you're eating? Or are there good conversations taking place? When you sit in your car, do you start with Bismillah? Do you recite Suratul Fatiha, for example? When something happens, a calamity, do you say, oh, four-letter word? Or do you say something religious? When you want to do something, do you have trust in God? They'll notice that. Or do you have trust in worldly things? Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Second specific advice. As parents, do not try to fix all the problems of your children. Let them struggle a bit. We have this saying in English, don't treat your kids like eggs. Eggs, very fragile eggs. Because when you're not there and they're eggs, well, they can break very easily. Don't solve all their problems for them. You can be there in the background as a guide, as a mentor. It's okay if they make some small mistakes. It's okay if they venture out and they do something which is not quite right. Let them feel the pain of mistake. Let them feel a little bit of the pain of a loss. It's not a big deal. They will learn in the long run, because sooner or later they will have to do this. Sooner or later they will have to experience some kind of loss. One thing which you can do, let's say they come to you with an issue, with a problem. Mom, Dad, I have a problem. What we usually do is we usually go all in. Do this, do this, do this, do this. Stop. Don't give the solution. Put the question back. Okay, what do you think we should do? How would you deal with this? How would you solve this? What solution can you come up with? Teach them problem-solving skills early. Let them become a little bit self-sufficient and responsible early. Don't leave it too late. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Number three, choose your battles wisely. Your room is not tidy. Your shoes are dirty. You look a mess. Your homework's not done. You're staying out too late. You're mixing with the wrong people. You didn't wake up early enough. You didn't get out early enough. I've got a bad report from school. The neighbors are complaining. The uncle from the mosque is complaining. The auntie's complaining. Every Tom, Dick and Harry is complaining. What's going on? Now, with this much noise coming from a parent, when you actually want to say something of value, it won't be heard. Because what they've done is, you're like a TV. They have just very nicely, you can see them, they can see you, but they have just put the volume down. Just phase this guy out. Oh, my mom, same old, okay, yeah, whatever, volume down. Choose your battles wisely. Now someone may say, well, that's the child's fault. Yes, it is. They shouldn't be disrespectful. They should listen to you. But put yourself into a reality situation. If you are always nitpicking about everything, then what is really serious is going to get missed. This is number one. Number two, be very careful how you reprimand them. Remember, you want to reprimand the action, not the person. So many times we start to say hurtful things, sarcastic comments to the child himself or herself. Ah, see, you are like this. Oh, see, you always do this. Yes, I knew this was going to happen. Typical whoever. Don't do that. Because again, they will just phase you out. Then when they have an issue, they won't come to you, because what will they say? Oh, I'll just get the same old rubbish. So be very careful, choose your battles wisely and reprimand properly. Do not have a sarcastic tone. Do not have a tone in which you are damaging that child. We have this saying in Africa, the axe doesn't remember, but the tree remembers. You may say things, you have forgotten it. The tree remembers when you cut it. The child will remember these comments. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Two more points and then we finish. So we haven't touched the rest of them, maybe tomorrow if we get time. Number four, try your best to make time for your child's friends. You need to know, who are they with? What are they like? How do they behave? Try and make time. Try and meet them. Maybe you can call them home. It's not easy. To have a house full of teenagers is not going to be easy. But you should see, how do they behave? What do they say? How do they talk? Who are these people? And not only that, meet their parents as well. Maybe together, if you have children who are mutual friends amongst the community members, the parents should also discuss with one another. But you know, we have some issues, how are we going to solve this? Timing, or places they go, or things they do. A more concentrated, concerted approach will be very, very beneficial. So make time for their friends, because you need to know that when my son or daughter has a problem and they're not coming to me, they're going to their friends. So what are the friends advising? Are they advising in a nice way, a wrong way, Islamic way, un-Islamic way? So make time for their friends. Number five, final point for tonight, is that every house should have some level of organization in terms of the rules you have and the consequences of rules. Now, what can happen is, especially in our culture, what can happen is, dad says no. Child goes round the back of dad, goes to mum, mum says, okay, yes. Mum says no. They know the right butter to spread on dad, dad says yes. So what happens? So when dad says yes, mum looks cruel, bad, nasty, and vice versa. Decide amongst the two of you, husband and wife, in advance, these are some of our principles in the home. And if you can, especially at a younger age, older age is not so much, at a younger age, try and write these things down and put them on the wall. It has a big effect. Like what? Like, for example, in our household, we will not do ghibat. The moment someone starts to talk about another person, the rest of us will all say, please be quiet. Like, for example, we will pray on time. No matter what happens, if namaz time is there, and if it's physically possible, we will pray. Another one, like what? We will not have unresolved rows and disputes and jagras after the day is done. We will solve everything before going to sleep. Any dispute, any issue we have will not carry into the next day. The next day is a new start. We will solve everything the night before, no issues. And on and on and on. Come up with 5, 6, 7, 8 maybe, not more than that, otherwise it becomes too overbearing. 5, 6 maybe of these principles, and stick to them and say, this is our family conduct. And then as husband and wife, mother and father, you need to agree that if these are violated, then what do we do? What are the sanctions? What are the repercussions? What are the outcomes of violating this? And what are the rewards? This is another thing in our culture. We are quick to punish, slow to reward. We know the stick, we don't use the carrot. Rewards are as effective, if not more effective, than punishments. So when the rules are followed, reward. When they are not followed, then come up with how you are going to deal with this. Let me give you a very good tip when you're talking about punishment. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. When you want to come up with punishments or sanctions, involve your children. Ask them. So if this rule gets violated, what should we do? You'll be surprised, sometimes they come up with harsher punishments than you or your wife will come up with. There are times when I've called my kids and I've said, okay, if this happens, then what happens? And they come up with a very, very harsh thing, and I tell my wife, shh, don't say anything. Let it be that what he said. Because it's even harsher than what we would have come up with. it's fine. Bring them in, you get them involved, they are part of it, they are part of the solution. So they know that actually, yes, we have committed to this and we have helped to decide this policy of the house. These were a few tips. Inshallah, this will give us something to start with. We have some more. I don't know if we're going to get a chance to discuss them or not. We'll see as we go along. May Allah give us tawfiq, give us the correct teachings of Ahlul Bayt in our households, give us unity within our families and our community, guide our youngsters, guide our children, guide our boys, our girls of all ages, guide them onto the right path. May He hasten the reappearance of our 12th Imam, Ajjalallahu Ta'ala Farajahu Sharif. Tonight we remember a very difficult, very painful, very mazloom shaheed. Assalamu alayka ya Aba Abdullah. And tonight we also must say Assalamu alayka ya Hasan al Mujtaba. O Imam Hassan, tonight we remember your beloved son. All of the Panjatan were represented in Karbala. Bibi Zainab represented her mother. Imam Hussein represented his grandfather. Hazrat Abbas represented Amirul Mu'mineen. Imam Hussein, of course, was representing himself as well. What about Imam Hassan alayhi salam? Imam Hassan had 5 sons. We don't hear too much about the other sons because there's not a lot of history about them. But for example, we hear about one son called Abdullah. Abdullah was a younger son of Imam Hassan. He is someone who was killed on the day of Ashura, right near the time of the Shahadat of Imam Hussein. Bibi Zainab was standing, Abdullah ibn Hassan, son of Imam Hassan, was standing with Bibi Zainab. She had her hands on him, holding him. As the enemies came close with the daggers drawn and the swords drawn, and Imam Hussein alayhi salam was on the floor and they were not sure, is this man alive or dead? They say that at that time this young Abdullah had so much love for his uncle, he released himself from the hold of Janabi Zainab and he ran to Imam Hussein. Imam Hussein sees this and cries out, Khudini, Khudihi, hold him Zainab, don't let him come. But he escaped and he ran. And they say that before the swords hit Imam Hussein, the swords were turned upon Abdullah and they cut him to pieces. But tonight's masail belongs to the other son of Imam Hassan. Janabi Qasim, on the night of Ashura, he comes to his beloved uncle Imam Hussein. He says, Aba Abdullah, I just heard you reading out all the names of the different shuhada, but you didn't mention my name. Am I not going to be killed tomorrow? Will I not be amongst the list of shaheeds? Imam Hassan looks at him. He must have seen his own brother Imam Hassan in the face of Janabi Qasim. Imam Hassan says, tell me Qasim, you want to die. Kaifal mawtu indak? How do you find death? Qasim says, uncle, if it is for you, ahla min al asal, it is more sweeter to me than honey. The next day, Ashura, companions are killed. Then comes the turn of Ahlul Bayt. Janabi Qasim comes to Imam. He says, oh uncle, may I go, may I go? Imam gives him many excuses. Imam says to him, Qasim, no, not yet. There are other people still, you go later. Qasim, wait a while. Qasim, go and bid farewell to your mother and to your aunts. Qasim keeps telling Imam, I have bid farewell, I have bid farewell. Imam says, go again, go again. He's trying to delay as much as possible. At the end, Qasim comes and says, oh Imam, will you not let me go? Here we have an interesting report in some of the histories that when Imam again is reluctant, Qasim goes back to his mother. He says, mother, no matter what I do, my uncle is not letting me go. The mother says to him, Qasim, for this day I have something from your father. And she takes out something. Some people say like a taweez, some people say like a bazuband, something, some kind of document. She says, take this, give it to your uncle. When Qasim takes the document to Aba Abdullah, the first thing Imam Hussein does, when he sees the writing of his brother Hassan, he puts the letter on his eyes, he kisses the letter. He remembers his beloved brother. He opens the letter, he begins to read, "Oh my brother, on the day of Ashura, when my son comes to present himself, do not be reluctant, let him go." Imam says, "Now I have no other option, I must let you go, O Qasim." Qasim begins to wear the armor of battle. He bids farewell to Aba Abdullah. I don't know what kind of farewell that would have been. Bibi Zainab must have come and she must have said, "Every time we want to remember our brother Hassan, we look at the sweet face of Janabi Qasim." Janabi Qasim takes the permission, he starts to go. The Shahadat of Qasim is very painful. What happens to the Shahadat of Qasim is when he steps out, the historians write that at the moment when Qasim exited the tents of Hussein, we saw his face, it was glowing like the full moon. The nur on the face of Qasim was unbelievable. He begins to ride, he begins to fight. At a young age, he manages to kill many of the side of Umar ibn Sa'd. But at the end, what happens is that Qasim's horse goes too far from the tents of Imam Hussein. And a time comes when a blow is hit to Qasim in such a way that he loses his balance upon the horse and he falls to the ground. When he falls to the ground, he cries out to his uncle. He says, "Oh uncle, come, take me, help me, I need you." Now there is a long distance between the tents of Aba Abdullah and where Qasim is. Imam Hussein begins to go, but the distance is too great. It is taking too long. In the meantime, Umar As-Sa'd tells his forces, "Whilst Aba Abdullah has not come, ride your horses over the body of Qasim." The horses trample the body again and again of Janabi Qasim. They say that for Qasim, something unique happened. Not only once, all the other shuhada, they cried out once, "Ya Aba Abdullah Adrikni," but not Qasim. Every horse, he would cry out, "Adrikni, Adrikni, Adrikni, Ya Aba Abdullah." The second thing they say about Qasim is that when Hussein eventually reaches Janabi Qasim and he begins to pick up the body of Janabi Qasim, all the other shuhada, Hussein Mazloom was able to pick up the body and take it back, but not for Janabi Qasim. Now he needs to pick up the individual pieces of the body of Hazrat Qasim. Allah la'natullah al-qawm al-zalimeen wa sayalamu alladhina zalamu ayyamun qalibin yanqalibun. Let us remember all marhumin. Rahimallahu man qara al-fatiha.